Hello, respected viewers, it's George from Ireland. Thank you for coming back to the channel. So this video is about what's happening in the Ukraine war now. We're over 900 days in since Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. And winter is coming, the weather's closing in, the snow will start to fall maybe by the end of this month. And it'll be very muddy. It's already getting a bit muddy from the rainfall. Rasputitsa, got a special Russian word for it, making off the main roads almost impassable for all but the hardiest vehicles. And that'll really slow things down for, say, a month. But by the time the ground is properly frozen in December, they can begin to move again, not as easily in the height of summer. So obviously, not quite a stalemate. Russia is still moving forward, but it's slowed. They were moving faster in early October. That's to be expected. You can look on the website of the Institute for the Study of War. It's just breaking it down, hamlet by hamlet, how many hundred meters they're gaining. And so there are these fantastical figures, over 1,000 Russian casualties a day sustained. But other sources say that's Ukrainian propaganda is maybe half that, like maybe 500 be more realistic, only of which about a quarter are killed, like 120, 130. That's still bad, considering they're only gaining just a few meters a day. But obviously going forward, that is, but how wide is that front? They're going forward on a 100-meter wide front or a kilometer wide front or whatever in various sectors. So squeezing the Ukrainians out. Now, the Ukrainians have got this difficult calculation to make. How much land are they willing to cede and for how many casualties? Because they can go back quite a long way, but you know they can't get many more soldiers. So it's attritional warfare. Russia's got the upper hand on that. Their population is 3.5 times greater than that of Ukraine. They're both in a demographic death spiral, some very low birth rates. I mean, Ukraine's like sort of 1.3 per woman fertility rate before the war, lower now. Okay, that's because a lot of younger Ukrainian women have gone to Western Europe. Russia's at 1.5, so not quite as bad. Other things, Russia had 10 million migrant workers before the pandemic. They now got 6 million. And so this spate of racism against Central Asians since the Kroger City Hall attacks has made their demographic death spiral worse. Now, it was often single young men rather than women of childbearing age or whole families coming. But nevertheless, there were some children or at least some young people to work. Russia's just throwing bodies at this, but Putin really doesn't want to have to order a wider draft. That caused panic stations in 2022. That September was called off after a while. Some people are exempt from that. The police are exempt from that, intelligence officers and so on. But okay, they can be better prepared, batten down the hatches so people can't leave. But they don't want that to happen. People would leave, some of them illegally, if necessary. You know, their border with Kazakhstan is, I think, the second longest land border in the world. It's over 2,000 kilometers long. And Russia, obviously, its security resources are stretched very thin indeed away from the Ukraine war. So some people would get across that porous border. So Russia's having a difficult time. Their economy is still growing, but less and less than it was. So people used to say that stringing this war out plays to Russia's advantages because of their enormous resources. Although there, in some ways, that's not true because they're burning through the national wealth fund. By the end of 2025, we'll have spent it all. Chasiv Yar, Russia's going to take, that's a question of when. If they're to take it within the next week, that's a success for Russia. If they didn't take it to, say, April, that's a success for Ukraine, because you think how many thousands of Russians would have been casualties because of that. And anyone else doing the cost-benefit analysis would say, not worth it. But they don't seem to manage to break through. Even they're learning and sending forward troops in petty packets, fives and tens, to seize a building. Can they get enough to then go forward to the next one or something like that? That if a drone strikes, it only kills about five of them. It doesn't take out too many of them, things like that. People who have been rushed through basic training have learnt these survival skills the hard way on the battlefield. They've more or less exhausted their supply of prison recruits. But now they've got the North Koreans there. So remember, North Koreans got a regular military of over 1 million troops, and including reservists, they've got something like 7 million. So that's, you know, but basically all military age males and some women too. The North Korea's got a population of not much over 20 million. But we'll think about South Korea's population problem. So one of the simple ways to solve that is to buy Koreans from North Korea. Korea's enslaved people, political dissidents, religious people in coal mines, and say, we will give you food, or even oil in return for releasing these people. Of course, what the Democratic People's Republic of Korea do would release them, give them double agents, or people are brainwashed or whatever, or people are very ill, or psychiatric patients or something like that. So that might not work. So Russia is trying to take back Kursk, and they are squeezing the Ukrainians out. But clearly the Russians weren't as spooked as that, as people thought. So perhaps the Ukrainians misread the psychology there. I thought the Ukrainians might have been better off to try and, okay, break into Russian territory, but as a flanking maneuver to come round. And the Russians are making some small ground in the Kharkiv Oblast, which is in Ukrainian territory. So bombardment of Ukrainian cities has really slackened off. But that could be the calm before the storm. It gets quiet, too quiet. Russia's obviously fairly low on its drones, its rockets, its missiles. Not run out of them by any means, but they'd rather husband them so they can have fire a big salvo over 101 night. There's no point in firing like about 10 every night, because that's too easy for the Ukrainian air defense to take down. Wait till you have so many that you'll just gish gallop them. They'll just be bamboozled. It's more than they can cope with. And some of them are bound to get through. So the F-16s, which have been gifted to Ukraine gradually this year, that released several this year, because it's rumored they're going to get up to 50 by the end of the year, by Belgium, the Netherlands, I think it's Denmark as well. That's helping as well, but it's not having a dramatic effect. They came too slowly. Apparently one's been shot down already. So they're grateful for that. They're often training in Romania, a NATO country with whom Ukraine's actually got increasingly amicable relations. There was a lack of amicability, part of the dispute over Snake Island. Remember my first couple of months in Romania, teaching this business executive, and seeing on the big map of Romania on the wall, and seeing Insula Sharpele, the island of snakes. The Romanians call it the same thing in their language. So it's disputed by the two. Moreover, Bukovina. Okay, Stalin, he took northern Bukovina off Romania in 1940. Southern Bukovina is still part of Romania, and there's some ethnic Romanians who are there. But anyway, they decided to let bygones be bygones. This is petty as compared to Russia reconquering Ukraine and then threatening Romania's northern border. So the deep battle, Ukraine's not doing very much these days, sometimes striking ammunition dumps, sometimes striking oil facilities. I sometimes question the efficacy of that. If they put all the munitions into striking Russian troops, could that really slow them down? And they say that, you know, artillery inflicts over 7%, so it's over 70% of casualties. Small arms is inflicting under 10% of casualties. Is going for Russian soldiers, is that worth it? Should they ignore the soldiers and just emphasize taking out the artillery, the rocket systems, planes, even tanks, something like that? I'm not sure. Then Russia would obviously have build up more and more troops. Okay, so the Black Sea, actually very little is happening there. Russia trying to interdict Ukrainian exports, which often go through Romanian territorial waters as soon as they can, thinking they'll be relatively safe there. And I don't think Russia's gone so far as to strike anything in Romania, therefore NATO territorial waters. Conscription, you know, Ukraine is a short of soldiers. These men are exhausted. Some of them were, say, drafted in 2020 due to leave military service in 2022. Then the war happened. They've been kept in. They're meant to get 10 days off at least twice a year. Sometimes leave has been cancelled because the situation is so urgent. And some of them are going mad about this. They're increasingly going AWOL. Then they're arrested, brought back. And so long as they agree to serve, they just write that off the first time. They don't the second and third time. A really cushy number is to be posted to the border guards serving on the western border with Slovakia or Hungary or Romania or Moldova or Poland. There's no danger there. Your main task there is to prevent Ukrainian young men crossing the border illegally, and you can extort bribes to let them, or you could take the opportunity to run away yourself. There are a few border guard units which are posted to the east to fight against Russia. So Ukraine, what they sometimes say to guys, no, you can't leave military service, but you can go to a border guard unit in the west, which is safe. And often you're sleeping inside. Maybe your wife and children can come to join you. Don't want to be disrespectful to Ukrainian women. There are Ukrainian women in the armed forces serving at the front. They're only about 5% of the Ukrainian military, but I don't want to pretend they're not there. So, and Ukraine's had virtually no success recruiting people from abroad this year. They're not really trying. There's a Ukrainian Legion for the International Legion of the Territorial Defense of Ukraine, and they're paid at the same rates as Ukrainian soldiers, which is, say, very low. So you do it for idealistic reasons. You don't do it for filthy lucre. But they could try and offer tempting salaries, which appeal to people from Pakistan or Nepal or whatever. That's where Russia's managed to recruit some troops. but then making no attempt to do so. But Ukraine just needs to widen conscription from the age of 18. And they said something like 45% of Ukrainians don't think it's shameful to dodge military service, 30% do. You know, I can't blame the guys who evade it because, okay, I wouldn't want to get killed either. But if Ukraine's going to win, they're going to have to do it. So then the real danger for Ukraine is Trump. If Trump comes back, he's almost certainly going to reduce military aid to Ukraine, if not cut it off altogether. Now, even if Trump doesn't win, the Republicans can control the Senate or the House of Representatives. Almost certainly they control one of them. Even if the Democrats get the White House and both houses of Congress, the Democrats are going to show less liberality than before. The situation is not looking good for Ukraine because, you know, where they're going to get something like $60 billion per annum from the United States, in addition to what the European Union and other allies give, like Australia or South Korea or Japan. Some of those countries like South Korea and Japan always only gave non-lethal aid, like flak jackets, helmets, ready to eat meals and things like that. But, you know, other NATO countries, they could afford that $60 billion in addition to what they already give. They could, but they're probably too short-sighted to make this investment in their own security. Budgets are quite strained. There's war weariness. The communists in Western Europe, the neo-Nazis, they're deeply sympathetic to Putin's totalitarian regime. And they will be peaceniks by cutting off the Ukrainians. So it's quite worrying for the Ukraine unless there's an excellent result from them from the United States. So where are we going to be a year from now if there isn't peace? They'll both be running rather low. I think Ukraine's situation will deteriorate. No doubt they'll be pushed back. I mean, not dramatically. It'll be in the tens of kilometers. That'll still be worse. Will Russia be more exhausted first? I don't think so. I think there's going to be a messy compromise. One thing Ukraine's not doing, which should be doing, I know it's quite short of resources, is build up some impenetrable defensive line, like the Surovikin line that the Russians built. I know they've been incompetent in all sorts of other things, but military experts have said that was superb and it was really unbreakable. And the Ukrainians need to do that. If they cannot expel the Russians, they could at least stop them ever advancing any further. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, George Callahan 79@gmail.com. Goodbye.